League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Right wing, it's Smart for Boston. Watched by Irving. Pull up three for Smart. And he finds the stroke again. Where did this come from? For Marcus Smart. Here they come down by three. 6 minutes to go. Smart at the top. Dribbling on Smith. Step back three. Good! He ties the game with his seventh three. It's 95 apiece in game three. LeBron, left wing. Backing down again, Smart. Out to Smith. He takes a three to tie. Good! 36.3 to go. Tie game at 106. Bounces to Bradley at the top. Bradley runs it right. Down the lane. Into the paint. Kick to the left side for Turepko. His three is good! They'll call it a two for the time being. They may have to check it. But either way, Boston has taken the lead. And Jonas Turepko off the bench has put down double figures. Smart has had the game of his life tonight. He finds Bradley. Left side three for the lead. Off the rim twice. And down! It goes down with .3 to go. It danced on the iron and then fell through. The inbound to Smith. Flings it into the air. Avery Bradley with the game-winning three with .1 to go. And Boston stuns Cleveland on the road to take game three. And this place is shocked and stunned and beside itself.
Momentum. We didn't continue to press the tempo. You know, Marcus Smart started to hit a lot of threes. They started to get momentum. That's what happens. You give a little team. I mean, you give a team a life. And they play so freely without IT. And they just made play after play after play. And we couldn't weather the storm. And I had a tough game, period. Not just in the second half. Me personally, I didn't have it. You know, my teammates did a great job of keeping us in the game and building that lead. But me personally, I didn't have it. Let a team grab momentum like that. You almost knew that last shot was going to go in. I mean, a lot of things went wrong. And I was just pretty poor. You want me to say? Seems like you only answer. You only ask questions when we lose. It's a weird thing with you, Kenny. Always come around when we lose, I swear.
I don't think the guy takes losing that well or failure that well because it doesn't happen very often. And to be heckled by a fan in your own building as you're walking to the post-game press conference in what's supposed to be, you know, kind of a private area. And then, obviously, that reporter, he has history with LeBron dating back to his first stint in Cleveland. So it wasn't a good look on the court. It wasn't a good look off the court.
He occasionally had an unexplainable playoff game, you know, years ago, right at the end of his first time in Cleveland, and then that 2011 finals, which was the last time he played in the playoff game. They'll play the whole fourth quarter and didn't score. Was the 2011 game five, the worst game of his career. He scores 8 points. The Heat lose. Go back and look for the bad game over the last 7 years. You can't find it. Last night was an absolute dud, and he was disengaged and doing nothing in the fourth quarter. And I haven't seen that from him in a long time.
It's an aberration. It will not happen again for a very long time. And oh, by the way, it had damn well better not. I don't want any excuses. I don't want this situation being, oh, look at LeBron and how awful he performed. So as a result, there's really no expectations for Cleveland. They're playing with house money against Golden State. Oh, no, absolutely not. We're not going there. No excuses. It was just one bad game. It will not happen again. He will dominate in game four. He will dominate in game five. They will close out this series because they know that they need to, because the Warriors are going to close San Antonio out tonight, and they don't need to be lollygagging around, messing around with the Boston Celtics.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
You know what? Right now, somewhere deep in the heart of Texas, somewhere deep in the heart of Houston, Texas, there is a glorious, bushy, magnificent beard hiding a very, very sly smile behind it. Somewhere, James Harden has a little tiny grin behind all of that fur. And he's thinking to himself, see, it can happen to any of us. Welcome to the extravaganza on this outstanding Monday afternoon. We appreciate you joining us on ESPN 106.5, the ticket where we are, Toledo Sports Leader. And we will continue to be somewhere. James Harden, whose season for the ages, and it was a glorious season, first player in NBA history to score 2,000 points and assist on 2,000 points. Just a remarkable, remarkable year for the Beard, who will probably finish second, it would be my guess. We'll talk about the top three in the NBA's MVP balloting. We know that LeBron James was informed at the end of the week, the way the rest of the world was, that the final three candidates for MVP, the top three vote-getters, are James Harden, Russell Westbrook, and Kawhi Leonard. LeBron James was thought to be expected to be very, very upset by that, very motivated by that, very angry by that, and maybe going to take it all out on Boston last night because of that. That did not happen. But that's another part of the story that we will talk about later. But right now, James Harden, whose season ended in the most inglorious of fashions, whose season ended in a Game 7 loss against the San Antonio Spurs, in which he was said to look almost drugged because of his complete lack of interest in taking over the game, his lack of interest in getting shots up, his lack of interest in leading. He just looked disconnected. He looked out of it, people said. Something was wrong. Did he have a stomach virus? Is there a flu bug going around? What is it that could have caused James Harden to be so completely detached with so much on the line? And nobody could understand it, and with good reason, because James Harden had never played like that really all season long. The last time he played where he was seemingly detached from the action, the last time that happened was in another playoff game back when he was the third of three big options in Oklahoma City a few years ago, back when Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook were still his teammates. And he really he had a playoff game in a deciding game, an elimination game, in which nobody could understand where he went, how he disappeared. Well, it happened somewhat again with this with his end of his Rocket season this year, and nobody could understand. But if you guys recall Frank Gargano and Jim Kuchlin, the day after that Houston elimination game, I kind of wanted to come to the defense, sort of in a way, of James Harden to say he's not the only guy that has, you know, that has endured such a moment. And I said, you know, even the greatest players among us, the greatest players in history, have experienced those kinds of moments. And I pointed back to the 2008 NBA Finals. The 2010-11 NBA Finals. I don't know why I went to 2008 there. 2010-11. I know why, because I also went back to the 2008 Eastern Conference Playoffs, and there was another game of similar stature. At any rate, it was the 2010-11 NBA Finals between the Miami Heat of LeBron James and Dirk Nowitzki's Dallas Mavericks. And we pointed to Game 5, which, again, it was a 2-2 series. It was not a closeout game, not an elimination game, but it was the game in which LeBron James scored 8 points, only took, I want to say, 11 shots that game, and nobody could figure out why he completely checked out of the game. Well, come to find out, I didn't have to go all the way back to the 2010-2011 NBA Finals to find one of those games. LeBron James gave us one a week later. Last night, LeBron James was almost as disinterested in leading, scoring, attacking, playing his overall dominant game, the dominant game that he had played quite literally for the entire playoffs up until that point. If you look at the four-game series against the Pacers, you look at the four-game sweep of the Raptors, and you look at the first two games of the Celtics series, LeBron James was in rare form, playing perhaps the best, most efficient, most complete basketball that he has played in maybe his career. And that's saying something for a four-time league MVP and a three-time NBA champion. But that's how dominant he had been. And just seemingly out of nowhere, he lays that dud of a performance last night that is just really, really hard to understand. It's almost inexplicable. Not almost, it is inexplicable. It defies explanation. LeBron James himself didn't have an explanation All he could do is say, I didn't have it. All he could do is say, you know, the rest of the guys came to play, but, you know, but we as a team didn't do it. But more specifically for me, I didn't have it. As a matter of fact, LeBron James, this is so inexplicable, so unimaginable, that when a reporter pressed him on what does I didn't have it mean, can you explain what that means? Does that mean a rhythm thing or what is it? He got a little testy, got a little chippy, got a little bit of snarky with the reporter, who, by the way, Cushman, I don't know if you recognize the voice or not, but this was the same reporter that Dwayne Casey got mad at during the Toronto series when he asked him about the Cavaliers' domination of the Raptors. Remember this?
Oh, yeah.
His name is Kenny Rota. He's a friend because he's been a part of the Cleveland media for a long time, or at least he was. Now he's down in Canton, and he does radio down there, but he still covers games, still covers press conferences,
right,
in addition
yeah.
to hosting his show. He was the guy who asked Dwayne Casey about the Cavaliers' domination. He said, dominate. Why you say dominate? I wouldn't say dominate, and clearly it was domination. The guy, you know, Casey was just, you know, he didn't like
right,
the word.
Right, sure.
But Rota kind of, you know, was on the, you know, his words, if not his name, was kind of on the lips of a lot of national people about that one. Well, the very same reporter asked what I believe to be just as innocent a question this time. And LeBron James kind of made him famous, or a little more famous, or whatever you want to say about it, as he pressed him on what does not didn't have it mean. Did you just not feel well? You weren't in a rhythm? Was it something they were doing defensively to make you, quote, not have it? Here, I'll let you hear the question for yourself, and then you can listen to LeBron James.
For you, you said, you know, it was just your game. Couldn't get into a rhythm tonight. Is that what it was, based on their defense, or just not feeling it, or what?
No, I was just...
Anything wrong with that question?
No, not that you I could
said,
tell.
You said, you know, couldn't get into a rhythm, and actually he didn't say rhythm. LeBron didn't. LeBron just said didn't have it.
Right.
And I think he's trying to paraphrase it. Okay, you didn't have it, you weren't in a rhythm, whatever. Was it defense? You didn't feel right? What does that mean? You know, didn't have it. It's a fair, legitimate question, but the way LeBron James handles it, I think, is, I don't know, indicative of how he felt about his own performance last night, because he's obviously angry and he's looking to take it out on somebody.
For you, you said, you know, it was just your game. Couldn't get into a rhythm tonight. Is that what it was? Based on their defense, or just not feeling it, or what?
No, I was just pretty poor. I mean, what do you want me to say?
Yeah.
Seemed like you only answer. You only ask questions when we lose. It's a weird thing with you, Kenny. I always come around when we lose, I swear. Yeah, okay.
2 points of clarification there. Number one, that's not true, because Kenny is there all the time. He covers most of the season.
I've seen everything except last night's been a win, and honestly, I happen to always catch on NBA TV some of the post games on pretty much all the Cavs playoffs
right.
games. Yeah, he's always one of the first ones to ask a question,
yeah.
and until last night, they've won every game.
In both locker rooms, by the way.
Yes.
In both locker rooms, and again, he went into the Toronto locker room to ask Casey a question about being dominated by the Cavaliers.
Heck, if I remember correctly, he got the first question into Brad Stevens, too, last night.
Did he really?
Yeah.
I didn't catch that. But the point of this, of course, isn't about the reporting habits of this Canton area reporter. It's about LeBron James obviously being more than just a little bit upset with the outcome and then just looking for his pound of flesh elsewhere.
No, I was just pretty poor. I mean, what do you want me to say?
And he could have stopped right there and everything would have been okay.
Yeah.
Pretty poor. That's all I can say is I played pretty poor. What else do you want me to say? And you know what? Kenny probably would have said, understood. You just played poor. There's no real reason for it, no explanation for it. You weren't feeling ill. There was no injury. It wasn't a defensive strategy. I just played poor. If he'd have said that and then even added the...
What do you want me to say?
What do you want me to say? It would have been fine. But then he has to twist that little knife.
It seemed like you only answer. You only ask questions when we lose. It's a weird thing with you, Kenny. I always come around when we lose, I swear. Yeah, okay.
And you know what? Good for Rota. Good for the reporter. You heard him at the end, off mic, obviously. You heard him saying, I'm here. I'm here all the time. And he's right. He is. I know for a fact that he is. And again, this isn't just, you know, media guy sticking up for another media guy. No, 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 no. This is just if a reporter asks a stupid – Jim, Cushlin, right? We've asked questions about other questions that have been asked.
Oh, yeah.
And we've criticized and saying, what a stupid question. No wonder Popovich got mad. That one was unnecessary. And then other times we'll say, come on, Popovich, you're being a punk here.
Sure, yeah.
You know, you're being a bully is what you're being here, because that's a very legitimate question from the reporter. So I evaluate it honestly on all sides. By the way, I have asked stupid questions of coaches and athletes in practices, after games, before games, before. Because I've done that job. In 20 years of radio, I've been that guy. I've been the guy that goes to the practices and does interviews for the radio station, et cetera, and I've asked stupid questions. I remember I was made to feel stupid by no less than Chris Palmer. You remember who Chris Palmer is, everybody?
I do, yeah.
Kids? You might remember the name of Chris Palmer. It's not very famous, but for a minute or two, he was the head coach of the Cleveland Browns. The first coach of the Cleveland Browns when they returned from their, what do you want to call it, hiatus, I suppose, when the real Browns left and went to Baltimore. And the new Browns were constituted as an expansion team back in 1999. Well, I was covering a practice for a radio station in Cleveland. I hosted weekend shows there, and I did some reporting during the week, et cetera, and I was covering one of the practices, and I don't remember what it was. But it was something about the way they were going to defend Cordell Stewart. They were playing the Steelers the second time that year. And I asked him some kind of a question about how he would defend Cordell Stewart based on something that Stewart did the week before. And he looks up at me and says, no, Bill. And I was like, first of all, does he not know my name? And if he doesn't, that's okay. I'm not exactly famous. And then I realized what he meant. He was trolling me totally. He was calling me Bill as in Bill Cowher. It's like, what the hell makes you think I'm going to tell you how I'm going to defend Cordell here in a press gathering, Bill? You know, and once he made me feel so stupid, I realized. First, I was embarrassed. Naturally, I'm standing among colleagues. We're all in this big group presser, not an actual press conference, you know, with the at the podium or anything. It was just on the sideline after practice, mm-hmm. and we're all there with our microphones out. First, I was embarrassed, but after I was done being embarrassed, I thought, oh, yeah. Why would he tell me that? That was a pretty – because I was very specific about, you know, what they were going to do with Cordell on third down or something like that. And he's like, no, Bill, I'm not going to tell you that. I'm not going to give you and everybody in Pittsburgh what we're going to do defensively against Cordell Stewart. So I learned a very, very valuable lesson there. One about making your questions much, much more general.
Right.
And the second one, not to ask Chris Palmer anything else.
But even that, you know, looking back, you know,
we've all been there, by the way. Every reporter will tell you this. And I'm talking about you can go up to Ed Werder, and I didn't pick him because he was one of the ones who was treated so unfairly and axed by ESPN. But I'm just talking about well-known NFL reporters. You can be any one of the best in the business on the national scene. But at one point, either on that national scene or on their local gigs before they got to the national levels, et cetera, we've all said or asked something really stupid. And been embarrassed by it by a coach or a player.
Oh, sure.
What were you going to say, Frank?
Nothing. I've definitely been on that side of the spectrum. We always had to do for women's basketball games at Bowling Green, we always had to do an interview that was broadcast. They would hook my mic up or whoever else was broadcasting to the PA system in the Stroh Center.
Right.
And it was after like a crushing loss. They lost to like Cincinnati this past season, like on a buzzer beater.
And you said, how do you feel?
Yeah, well, the coach came up to me and was obviously, like, upset. And I didn't do, like, many of these post-game press conferences like that.
Yeah.
And she came up, and I said, you know, hey, coach, how you doing? You know, just like.
Just
and
walk.
she gave me a look. It was like, well, pretty upset, you know, broadcast throughout the whole stadium, like. All right, let's try to get this back on track. I'm kind of stupid.
It happens. It really does. Cush, what are you saying?
And I was going to at least say that, at least in your story that you're mentioning, at least you can probably look back on it and say, well, that's a pretty a good quick one-liner there by Chris Palmer, whereas comparing it to this one, no, not so much. LeBron still comes off a little bit like a jerk on this one.
Yes, exactly, because in this case, the reporter didn't do anything wrong. That my point of, you know, going back down memory lane there, with some of those things is we do as reporters, you know, tasked with listening to some answers to some other questions and then formulating your own perhaps based on those. Or if you were a writer and you were writing a particular story and you needed quotes that were going to be definitely geared toward the angle you were taking, you know, your questions obviously sometimes can be very good or can be very bad. And when they're bad, they'll let you know it. But when they're good and they still treat you, you know, poorly, and then you just think, you know what, this guy's just a jerk. And I won't say LeBron is a full-on jerk, but he treated this particular reporter like he was a jerk because he was really mad. He's mad about his performance. He was embarrassed by his performance. And he probably felt like, look, I covered it all when I said everybody else played good, but for me, I just didn't have it. I didn't have it.
No, I was just pretty poor. I mean, what do you want me to say?
Yeah.
It seemed like you only answered. You only ask questions when we lose. It's a weird thing with you, Kenny. Always come around when we lose, I swear. Yeah, okay.
That's just an angry guy right there, looking for somebody else to take his frustrations out on. And I get it. It'll happen. Now, I want to play another quick clip. And Kush, I didn't know if this was in your montage or not. I didn't think I heard it, but I want to play a quick clip from last night's Cavaliers debacle. They give up a 21-point third quarter lead. 21 points. I mean, this is getting close to the, you know, Hawks territory that we saw late in the season, and then of course in the Pacers series as well, when you know you either hold or give up a 25-point lead, and they did both. And this is a 21-point lead they gave up in the Eastern Conference Finals at a time when you know your opponents, the Warriors, are very likely going to continue to sweep through the Western Conference because of the absence of Kawhi Leonard. You don't want to be playing around and playing a fifth game, and God forbid a sixth game, with the Boston Celtics minus their best player. That's just obviously bad news. You don't want to be doing this. So obviously a little bit of anger and a little bit of being frustrated on the part of the Cavaliers. So I want to play this clip. J.R. Smith, of all people, when asked about LeBron James' game last night, when asked about LeBron, quote, not having it, J.R. Smith essentially called LeBron James out, saying, we need more. We need more from that guy. That guy can't be giving us that kind of a performance. Listen for yourself.
People like him, you got to play confident the whole night and play aggressive. I mean, it's Eastern Conference Finals. It's not enough for him. For what he does, what he brings, it's not enough. He knows that. We know that. And just expecting him to be better on game four.
By the way, to be clear, you can hear the basketballs bouncing. That was not last night. That was this morning.
Right.
This morning's shoot-around/practice after game three and the loss last night. But how about J.R. Smith? When
he's
asked
right.
about LeBron James, he said he's got to be more aggressive. We need him to be more aggressive. We need him to, you know, to do his thing. That's part of who we are and what we are. And for I got to tell you, that's courageous, because you know who J.R. Smith's number one fan is? It's LeBron James.
That's true.
You know who got J.R. Smith paid with that four-year deal he got? LeBron James did. Cavaliers were kind of wondering, what do we do? What do we do? You remember this past offseason?
Sure.
He just had a tremendous impact on the NBA Finals. J.R. Smith was red hot in the playoffs, helped us get to our championship, but he has also been a mercurial, up-and-down kind of a guy. He can be a superstar or a flake. Do we really want to invest 4 years of big-time money on the bet that he'll be a superstar, not a flake? And it was LeBron who said, pay this guy. Get him in. He's essential and crucial to what we do. And by the way, I don't know if LeBron would have been as adamant about that if he knew that they were going to go ahead and add Kyle Korver later, who plays a similar role in the offense as a great off-the-bench and sometimes starting lineup three-point, you know, sniper. But whether J.R. Smith is sniping or not, J.R. Smith is a much better on-the-ball perimeter defender than Kyle Korver or pretty much anybody else they have. Maybe he and Shumpert are probably the two standard bearers in that regard. So LeBron knew the value of J.R. Smith, told the Cavaliers, pay this guy. And J.R. Smith, by the way, despite being injured for most of the season, is playing good defense, is coming up with big shots. He had a huge one last night, obviously, with,
oh, yeah,
what, 15, 16 seconds left when the Celtics took the three-point lead. He came back down and answered with the three-point shot from the top of the key. It was completely clutch. Then they went back down and scored again, did the Celtics, and then Kyrie came down the middle and scored his two. And then we all know that set up, you know, the game tying, or I'm sorry, it was a tie game and then the game winner by Avery Bradley. But how about J.R. Smith kind of talking about LeBron James saying we need more?
People like him, you got to play confident the whole night.
And you got to play confident the whole, it's just so bizarre. Wait a minute. Is J.R. Smith lecturing a four-time MVP on being confident? Rather than a four-time MVP talking about a teammate that had an off night saying we need him to be confident, it's just a little bizarre.
People like him, you got to play confident the whole night and play aggressive. I mean, it's Eastern Conference Finals. It's not enough for him. For what he does, what he brings, it's not enough. He knows that. We know that. And just expecting him to be better on game four.
I mean, I find that just an incredibly telling turn of events. It's not enough for him. He knows that. We know that. It's not enough. He's got to be better game four. You just didn't think you would expect to hear that from any teammate, let alone J.R. Smith, about the guy who coming into last night's game was averaging some 36 points a game in the playoffs and grabbing 9 rebounds and handing out 7.5 assists and shooting 55% from the floor and shooting 48% from three and everything else that we knew. You just wouldn't expect, you know, we need more. We need more out of that guy. He's got to play confident. He's got to be more aggressive. Just a very strange turn of events last night in Cleveland.
Yeah, the other thing, though, is that don't forget, in my humble opinion, he's completely right, though.
Yes, he is.
I mean, you know,
nothing he said was wrong. It's just bizarre that that's what where we are now.
I'm just saying because, you know, in the last 24 hours, I've heard, in addition to the obvious storyline regarding LeBron in this one, I've heard some try to say, well, you know, there were some defensive things late in the game. No, I don't want to hear any of it. This loss is solely on LeBron. I mean, Kyrie showed up. Kevin Love showed up. I mean, my God, Tristan Thompson, for goodness sake, had 18 and 13. Do you realize that? I didn't even know this. Do you realize he's shooting 60% from the free throw line in these playoffs? And
yes,
he was outstanding last night. I didn't realize it was that good. And considering it's Tristan Thompson, that's incredible. JR had 4 threes. If you want to try to blame, oh, there's a Cleveland Cavs defense. No,
Hold on. Pump the brakes a little bit there on that, Kush, because I think what people are talking about with that regard is not just defense in general, but defense on the game-winning play. If you notice,
okay,
Avery Bradley
play.
Didn't have anybody within two area codes of him.
No,
defensive lapse on the pick. They did not guard the pick and the pop correctly, and really did miss an assignment. So with the game tied at that moment in time, that's when the defense did come up its weakest. In other words, even despite LeBron's poor play and his perceived disinterest, whatever you want to say about it, you know, and the reason he looks so out of it, you know, comparing it to James Harden as I did to start the show, whatever you want to say, they still could have won, and they at least could have gone into overtime if they defend that last play. Brad Stevens drew up a great play. They executed it to perfection. They got a great screen, and Avery Bradley had nobody near him as he took that shot and got one of the most fortuitous bounces you're going to see in the postseason, especially with a game on the line in a 2-0 series like that, especially because that ball bounced straight up and had some backspin on it and bounced again and finally, you know, rattled home. But on that play, I think that's what people are talking about, Jim. The loss last night was attributed largely to LeBron's disappearing act, but also marginally to the fact that on the last play of the game, you know, where it's, quote, winning time, the Celtics completely out-executed with their offense what the Cavs were able to do on their defense.
And that's a fair point. If you're talking just the one singular play,
and that's what I've heard a lot of folks
say. And that's fair, although I got to give Brad Stevens a little bit of credit on his play call for that one at the same time.
Oh, no question. Yeah, it was a great play call, and like I said, it was – you know, is great execution, to be quite honest. I mean, that's what you do. That's how you play this thing. LeBron James, by the way, if you're looking for the raw numbers last night in this very strange disappearing act, he did play 45 out of the 48 minutes. That's right, more than anybody else. Took only 13 shots in 45 minutes. 4 for 13, 0 for 4 from deep. He had 6 rebounds, 6 assists, and most importantly and most tellingly, 6 turnovers. And perhaps even more telling, 3 points, 1 rebound, 1 assist in the entire second half.
Zero in the fourth.
Scoreless for the final 16 minutes.
That's just nuts.
That's all 12 minutes of the fourth and going four into the third. Just completely invisible. Disappearing act. And like I said, that's why I started the show with the James Harden reference. It was only a week ago we were all asking, how can that be?
Yep.
How can an MVP candidate, how can Mr. Triple-Double, when his team needs him the most, how can he just look so out of it and just look so uninvolved? Remember, James Harden only took 11 shots. He only took 11 shots. And nobody could understand why he wasn't engaged. Well, here's LeBron James, who's way better than James Harden, who took 13 shots, just two more, in 45 minutes, and looked completely disengaged. So it happens, is the point here. I'm certain that it probably happened to Larry Bird once or twice. Maybe it even happened to Michael Jordan. I don't know. I don't know. But possibly. I sent a text this morning to my friend Rick Noland. We have Rick on the program on a regular basis breaking down these Cavaliers playoffs. You know that. Rick and I talked on, was it Friday or was it Thursday? I think it was Thursday. We talked after game two. No, game two was Friday. Maybe it was in anticipation of game two.
Yeah, it was in anticipation of game two.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Anyway, Rick was talking about LeBron's performance, I guess, after game one, then must end, plus the whole playoffs in general. And do you remember what he asked me? He said, you know, I don't usually engage in these kinds of things, but he said, from what I'm seeing right now, he asked me, he kind of turned the tables on me and interviewed me and said, do you think it's time to start talking about LeBron James and Michael Jordan and the real GOAT here? And maybe he is, you know, on the verge of exceeding even Michael Jordan as the greatest player of all time, because what he's doing right now is so spectacular and special. And my response was, no, I don't think so, and here's why. And I talked about the finals, 6-0, six MVP awards for Michael Jordan. He doesn't do that in the postseason. He doesn't do that the way LeBron did in Game 5 of the 2011 finals against the Mavericks. He doesn't have those disappearing act kind of things like we've seen from time to time with LeBron. And that's why he won all six titles and why he won all six MVPs. He just doesn't do that. And you know, Rick respectfully disagreed because of this, that, or the other thing. So I texted him this morning, and I said, hey, Rick, I said, I think LBJ just did his damnedest to help me win the argument with you vis-a-vis MJ. I don't think MJ ever had a performance like that in an Eastern Conference Finals. And Rick responded to me, well, hold on, let me just pull it up, because I want to quote it because I thought it was kind of funny. Rick responded, totally agree. And I responded, what? Without a fight? That's no fun. And he responded, no defense. He doesn't have any defense to make his point with. And I said, ha, I guess you have a point. In his response, and here's the money line, yes, I do. I have 3 points and one rebound and one assist in the second half.
Nice.
Because that's all there was. Michael, I don't know. I don't have every Michael Jordan game log in my head. I don't have it all memorized, but I don't recall Jordan going into a conference finals and laying an egg like this, or certainly in an NBA finals the way LeBron did in 2011, and that to me is the separator, the consistency of outstanding performance.
Hey, Bob, Mike and Mike actually tweeted out this morning, Michael Jordan never scored fewer than 15 points in a playoff game. LeBron James has 6 such games in his career, all losses.
Wow. All what?
All losses.
All losses. Holy cow. I got to take that note down. And
that sounds a little familiar.
I got to file that one in the memory bank for the next time I talk to Rick or anybody else who wants to have the GOAT fight.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. Because I remember we were looking up something Jordan-wise a couple weeks back, and it involves those playoffs, and I scanned through his game logs, and that sounds about right, because I don't remember seeing a point total lower than about 15 or 16 as I quickly scanned through all that.
So LBJ has had 6 playoff games of below 15 points. And all losses, right?
Yep.
And Michael never scored less than 15 in a playoff game.
Not once.
Interesting. Very interesting. And that's kind of what I talk about with the consistency with that he always displayed with the money on the line, meaning a playoff game. I want to squeeze in a call real quick because I hate to make this poor guy put on hold for as long as we're going to have him on hold. Brian in Fostoria, thanks for your patience. Go ahead. You're on the air, Brian.
Hey, Bob. I call into you guys every now and then.
We appreciate it, too. Thanks, brother.
Yeah, no problem. I kind of want to comment on LeBron's post-game press conference.
Sure, go ahead.
I feel like we put athletes on too much of a pedestal. I mean, athletically, physically, sure. But emotionally, I mean, they're still people. You know, they're people just like all of us, dads. And so nobody has any idea what was going on to make him feel this way. Same thing with James Harden a week ago. So to me, the guy knows that he is the best player in the NBA right now. And after a performance like that, he knows that he's just going to get trash talked. So I can understand him not wanting to answer. I don't really feel like his response to Kenny was rude or anything. It felt a little catty, sure. But at that point, I don't think anybody that's in that kind of a position would respond any differently.
Well, here would be my response to that. And that's a fair observation, Brian. You said that he knows he's the best player and that he had a bad game and he knows he's going to face some trash talk. Did you detect any trash talk in the reporter's voice, or is it just the reporter probing deeply, more deeply, his own words when he said, "I didn't have it tonight"? Well, what does that mean? Was it something that they did defensively to take you out of it or to not have it? Or was it just you couldn't find a rhythm? What do you mean when you say you don't have it? I didn't detect trash talk there. I detected the same kind of a man. As you say, these guys, these athletes on pedestals, you got to realize they're human. They're dads, they're husbands, they're someone else. Well, so's the reporter. And he's asking a question that is a fair question. If you're going to write for your article, you know, for the next day's paper or for your blog or whatever the case might be, if you're going to write an article, you need more trying to describe the reason for the way the game turned out. You need more than "I didn't have it." You might want to probe a little deeper and say, what is it that caused you to not have it? If you can explain it, can you put it in any more words for us? That's the job of a reporter, and I don't think that's trash talk. And I think that the athlete should respect the reporter as much as the reporters should also respect the athletes.
I 100% agree with you. I don't think Kenny was asking a rude question in any way or such a way at all. But this is one of the reasons that I can't stand Popovich, is because of the way he treats reporters.
Agreed.
His little tirade after Kawhi went out, I think was completely uncalled for. So in that respect, I don't think
his tirade against the reporter was uncalled for. Now, I won't criticize his tirade against Pachulia, because if he was really ticked off about Pachulia and wanted to tick off the checklist of all of the Pachulia perceived dirty plays, I'm okay. But the tirade against the reporter about, like, you know, how do we feel or whatever the heck it was, you're right. I agree. That's ridiculous.
And I agree, and I know that these guys have jobs, and I don't think he was asking in a rude manner or not. I just think, like you said, he's needing to take it out on something, just like anybody would when they're frustrated. We always feel bad about it afterwards, and I guarantee you, if you asked him today, he would say, "Yeah, I was a little catty with it, and it was uncalled for."
Yeah, I would totally agree. And I think if you were to ask him in his heart of hearts, if he really thinks that guy only asks questions when they lose, he'd probably say no, because the dude is here all the time. He's there all the time, and that's, you know, again, it's just, you know, there's no reason to make anybody look bad there, especially when they're just trying to do their job. Asking a legit question about, what do you mean by didn't have it? Did you feel sick, or was it their defense, or whatever the case might be? And by the way, what is the answer to that question? In game two, LeBron went to the basket with impunity against Jay Crowder and against Kelly Olynyk and anybody else they put on him, and he scored all of those points. We know that some 70% of his points were in the paint and in the restricted area. And yesterday, he didn't even attempt to go to the rack. It was all outside or nothing. And that's the bizarre part about this. And if I'm a reporter and I'm asking him, you know, LeBron, you didn't have it, what is it? What was different this game that made you not go to the basket as much as you did in game two? It's a legit question because it's the story of the game. It's the reason why people are wondering what was wrong with LeBron this game.
I think if you gave these athletes a cooling down period before their actual post-game press conference, I think you'd get a lot more straightforward, honest answers.
Well, but they do. But they do.
Sure.
Because if you notice, he's in street clothes. He's had the full, you know, team time in the locker room before reporters are allowed in. Then he got to take a shower, as long and as leisurely as he likes. Then he gets to get dressed. Then he comes out to the podium. The guy probably had at least 30, 40 minutes between final whistle or final horn and sitting at that press conference. And, you know, like I said, because he didn't entertain people at his locker, he, in the playoffs, they actually bring players of the game or, you know, primary people out to the press room. So he had a lot of time to kind of decompress, take a shower, get dressed, talk with his boys, you know, whatever the case might be. I think he had all the time that he needed there. He just, I don't think anything was going to kind of take away his bad mood. Hey, I got to run, Brian. Really good call, brother, but I got to get out. Let's take that time out now on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Hey, J.R. Smith, what do you think of the game LeBron had last night?
People like him, you got to play confident the whole night and play aggressive. I mean, it's the conference finals. It's not enough for him. For what he does, what he brings, it's not enough. He knows that. We know that. And just expecting him to be better on game four.
So now we know what J.R. Smith thinks of LeBron James' game. It wasn't enough. We'll find out what Dennis Manilow thinks of LeBron James' game coming up right after the top of the hour on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Here they come, down by 3, 6 minutes to go. Smart at the top, dribbling on Smith. Step back three. Good! He ties the game with his 7th three. It's 95 apiece in game three. LeBron, left wing, backing down against Smart. Out to Smith. He takes a three to tie. Good! 36.3 to go. Tie game at 106. Smart has had the game of his life tonight. He finds Bradley. Left side three for the lead. Off the rim twice. And down! It goes down with .3 to go. It danced on the iron and then fell through. The inbound to Smith. Flings it into the air. Avery Bradley with the game-winning three with .1 to go. And Boston stuns Cleveland on the road to take game three. And this place is shocked and stunned and beside itself.
Momentum. We didn't continue to press the tempo. You know, Marcus Smart started to hit a lot of threes. They started to get momentum. That's what happens. You give a little team, I mean, you give a team a life. You know, they play so freely without IT. And they just made play after play after play, and we couldn't weather the storm. And I had a tough game, period. Not just in the second half. Me personally, I didn't have it. You know, my teammates did a great job of keeping us in the game, building that lead. But me personally, I didn't have it. Let a team grab momentum like that, you almost knew that last shot was going to go in. I mean, a lot of things went wrong. And I was just pretty poor. You want me to say? Seems like you only answer. You only ask questions when we lose. It's a weird thing with you, Kenny. You always come around when we lose, I swear.
I don't think the guy takes losing that well or failure that well because it doesn't happen very often. And to be heckled by a fan in your own building as you're walking to the post-game press conference in what's supposed to be, you know, kind of a private area. And then, obviously, that reporter, he has history with LeBron dating back to his first stint in Cleveland. So it wasn't a good look on the court. It wasn't a good look off the court.
He occasionally had an unexplainable playoff game, you know, years ago, right at the end of his first time in Cleveland, and then that 2011 finals, which was the last time he played in the playoff game. They'll play the whole fourth quarter and didn't score, was the 2011 Game 5, the worst game of his career. Go back and look for the bad game over the last 7 years. You can't find it. Last night was an absolute dud, and he was disengaged and doing nothing in the fourth quarter. And I haven't seen that from him in a long time.
It's an aberration. It will not happen again for a very long time. And oh, by the way, it had damn well better not. I don't want any excuses. I don't want this situation being, oh, look at LeBron and how awful he performed. So as a result, there's really no expectations for Cleveland. They're playing with house money against Golden State. Oh, no, absolutely not. We're not going there. No excuses. It was just one bad game. It will not happen again. He will dominate in game four. He will dominate in game five. They will close out this series because they know that they need to, because the Warriors are going to close San Antonio out tonight, and they don't need to be lollygagging around, messing around with the Boston Celtics.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Onward we roll now, 8 minutes after 4 o'clock on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader. A lot of reactions to last night's Cavaliers 21-point lead in the middle of the third quarter, completely erased by the Isaiah Thomas-less Boston Celtics. What does it say about the series? Probably not much. Cavaliers are still going to win the series in easy fashion. What does it say about the Cavaliers and their ability to hold leads and their ability to close teams out and their ability to hang with the soon-to-be Western Conference final opponent, Golden State Warriors? Joining us now to break it all down, why did LeBron James have such a mysterious disappearance, is our good friend Dennis Manilow. Covers Cleveland sports, was at the game last night out there at Quicken Loans Arena. He is with the Cleveland Plain Dealer and the Northeast Ohio Media Group. Joins us now on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket right here in Toledo. D-Man, what's going on, my brother?
What's up, Bob France? Hey, I'm not going to say the series is going to go to the Cavaliers. Sorry. That kind of arrogance is what tripped up the Cavaliers last night. So,
that's true.
The series isn't over until one team has four W's next to its name.
That's very true. That I believe last night their cockiness was showing, their arrogance was showing, especially when they were force feeding Kevin Love, who was so hot in the first half. And they built a 20-point lead, and it just appeared. And I got to tell you, D-Man, as great as they are, and as mentally tough as they are, and as good of a motivator as I'm sure Tyronn Lue is, it's very hard to tell grown men not to feel like this is just like game two. The lead is 20 right now. It'll soon be 30. It'll soon be 40. This team couldn't hang with us with Isaiah. They sure as hell can't hang with us now. It's very hard to tell these guys not to feel what they were feeling as they opened up yet another 20-point lead on a team that they just decimated for two straight games.
Doesn't matter. You still got to finish that. That's why I tweeted out it was an epic joke. I mean, it's one of the most stunning upsets that I can recall in the playoffs. And I know there have been enough of them, but single-game upsets, given the circumstances, given that it was a home game, and Boston for the Cavs, and given that they had smashed Boston twice in Boston. And listen, the Cavaliers had better be careful. And, this is silly talk. This is Dennis Manilow. He's talking negativity about the Cavs just because of one game. Yeah, he's going overreaction. All I'm doing is looking at the most recent history in these playoffs, or two rounds ago, when the Boston Celtics opened up in an 0-2 hole after getting punked twice in their own building by the Bulls, okay? Then they proceed to go on the road and win two and then another, and they close it out in six. Granted, the injury to Rajon Rondo changed the complexion of the series. I give you that. But what I'm saying is that just because the Celtics won game three doesn't mean, well, they've shot their wad now. They're not winning game four. Why not? Why can't they win game four?
Well, I'll tell you why. Because they're not as good as the Cavaliers. Not even close to being as good as the Cavaliers. Hold on. And if the Cavaliers are not feeling cocky and full of themselves the way they were last night, they wouldn't have come back and won game three against the Cavaliers. So to me, the lesson learned that you just talked about, they can't be cocky. The lesson has been learned. And I think what you just heard there from Stephen A. Smith and Dave McMenamin and Brian Windhorst and others, I think they're right on. That LeBron, and we'll talk about him in a second, but particularly LeBron, and those who learned a valuable lesson tonight, they're going to show how well they learned it on Tuesday in game number four. And they're not going to be cocky. They're going to put their pedal to the metal, and they're going to go ahead and finish this team, and they're going to finish them. Well, they wouldn't be finishing them. They still have to go five now, but they're going to finish them off in this game and go back to Boston for another one in very, very short order.
All right. Well, these are my counters to that. Yeah. Number one, the cockiness can only take you so far in terms of explaining the loss, because their defensive issues were exposed last night. You say, well, how come they weren't exposed in the first two games? Well, one reason was because Boston was missing open shots. So the Cavs, I think, were lulled into a false sense of security that their defensive lapses, which had reared their ugly head in the second half of the season, especially the second half of the season.
No doubt.
That those defensive lapses were somehow not there because the Celtics were missing shots. And you heard Brad Stevens say, I just kept waiting for our guys to make some shots. And one perfect example was Marcus Smart.
Sure.
Last night. So the Celtics say to themselves, all right, let's say we've knocked the arrogance off the Cavs, and now they're going to be, humble. They got the humble pie served, as Kyrie told everybody. All right, so they come in humble. They come in playing hard, but they still haven't necessarily corrected their defensive issues. Look at the last play of the game. I mean, you saw a classic example. J.R. Smith just gets lost in the wash and forgets to cover Bradley. on the switch.
It was a great pick. It was a very well-designed play by Brad Stevens, and they executed it perfectly. The Cavaliers did not defend it right.
Well, and that's the thing. The Celtics are saying to themselves, look, we don't have Isaiah, so we have to share the ball. It really has to be a team thing. Everybody's got to be on the same page, which they are. Let's move the ball around. Let's slow the pace a little bit. Let's play our grimy defense, and we'll take our chances. But here was the thing. The Cavaliers could have ended the series last night, okay, because you go up 3-0, you kill the will. There's no way that the Celtics are even caring about game four, and they're not going to do that because they know that eventually they'll lose anyway. Now the Celtics are feeling good about themselves. They're down 2-1. They say, look, all we have to do is win one game. We got our home court back. We're getting used to playing without Isaiah. We know we're a good defensive team. And presumably, if they win game four, they're completely in the Cavaliers' heads. All the pressure is on
them. Yeah, but Dennis, you do not believe they're going to win game four. I mean, I know you're playing devil's advocate here and trying to play the other side of this, because I know you know better than that. This team is just not good enough. If the Cavaliers are focused and motivated, offensively and defensively, they roll the Celtics, as they did five of the first six times they faced them this year, postseason, regular season combined.
Well, Bob, listen, yeah, go ahead and accuse me of overreacting and whatever.
I didn't say you're overreacting. I'm saying you're playing devil's advocate. Are you not?
Bob, I never thought I'd see what I saw last night out of a team that opened the playoffs 10-0. Okay, granting that their opponents were missing open shots in the Indiana series, in the Toronto series, and then the Boston series. Still, you were 10-0 going into a game in your house against a depleted team that was buried and mocked by everybody everywhere, and you still lost to them. And they hung on, what was it, 111? Was that the final? 111-108?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, they put 111 points on you in your building. Oh, by the way, Jerebko, of all people, is out playing LeBron James in the fourth quarter. I mean, so my point is, if that's going to happen, which I never thought was going to happen, then why am I automatically going to say, oh, well, they'll fix it in game four. Everything will be fine.
Let's think about that for a moment, D-Man. We're talking to Dennis Manilov, who is pessimistically covering the Cavaliers for the Cleveland Plain Dealer out there in Northeast Ave Media Group, Cleveland.com, out there in Cleveland. Let's talk about this, because the Cavaliers were already up 2-0 on the Toronto Raptors in the semis, conference semis. And I asked you, I said, because right before the series, you said it was going to go 6 or 7. Because Toronto is this, that, and the other, and the Cavs' defense is this, that, and the other. And I said, okay. And I thought the Cavaliers would win in 5. But they were up 2-0, two very easy victories. They really, you know, exerted their will against Toronto. And I had you on at that time, and I said, you don't still think this is going to go 6 or 7, do you? It's now 2-0. For it to go 7, you know, Toronto would have to win 3 of the next 5. For that to happen, you know, to get to three of the next four to get to a game 7, and you thought that they would. You said you still have a problem with this, that, or the other. So I have to ask, only because of the similarity of the situation. Okay, Cavs are up 2-0 in this one, two easy victories. Boston gets a win, yes, but what makes you think that this team is any more equipped to go 7 or 6 or, you know, win game 4 and get in their heads, et cetera, than Toronto was, when obviously the Cavaliers finished them off, again, relatively easily?
Well, I'd like to think that I said Toronto could extend the series because I thought Kyle Lowry was going to be available. But even then, you know, the fact that he was out, that helped the Cavs, but you give the Cavs plenty of credit for the sweep. And I was incorrect that, the Raptors did not get a game. The difference between
before you continue, very similar, by the way, isn't it, that the, you know, it was Lowry, their point guard, who went out, and now it's Thomas, the point guard, is out here as well.
Yeah.
So it's kind of similar circumstances. Go ahead.
Yeah, but here's what I'll do in the differences, and the reason why I have more pessimism probably about, if I'm the Cavs, from the Cavs' point of view, about the Celtics than I do the Raptors, and that is, number one, I think the Celtics are a grimier defensive team. They're more committed to physical defense than the Raptors. And they are in your face, and they're not afraid to pull you down. They have fake tough guys who do emerge in these situations and don't care, guys like Jarebko, guys like Olenek, guys like Marcus Smart. So they have that. And the other thing, again, I mentioned it earlier, is the Celtics remember their first round against the Bulls. You know, and they got punked in two games in Boston. Yes, Rondo was one of the reasons why, of course. But the fact is that the Celtics are down 2-0 going to Chicago. Even without Rondo, people were saying, okay, this is the end of the, you know, Brad Stevens might be run out of town. What about the Isaiah Thomas experiment, if you will, or do you build around Isaiah? They're going to get swept by the Bulls. Even the undermanned Bulls are going to take them out of their, you know, put them out. Well, guess what? They rip off four in a row. So the Celtics are capable of winning these types of games more so, in my opinion, than the Toronto Raptors.
Dennis Maniloff joining us, breaking things down as far as the Cavaliers and their loss last night. Shocking loss from a 21-point mid-third-quarter lead to the buzzer beater by Avery Bradley. By the way, have you ever seen a less impressive buzzer beater? You know that swish at the buzzer and the light comes on. Boink, 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 before finally dropping. So
like LeBron said, you knew that was going in. You knew it was going in the way the night went for Cleveland.
Yeah, you kind of had to feel that way. All right, so let's talk about LeBron. I started my show today by saying that somewhere in Houston, there's a very bushy beard hiding a very wry smile behind it and with a little nod of understanding because now James Harden is able to say, see, it happens. It happens even to the best of us. It was a disappearing act of Harden proportions in Game 7 against San Antonio. Harden, as we know, was 2 for 11 in that game, and everybody wondered, why was he so disengaged? Why did he look like he was just not involved? Why was he not being aggressive and attacking? LeBron last night was 3 for 14. He took three more shots than Harden did. Had 11 points and six turnovers. Had 3 points in the entire second half. One rebound, one assist from the King. It happens. It happens, I guess, to everybody from time to time. It happened to LeBron, as we know, in the 2011 Finals against the Mavericks as well. My question to you, Dennis, is how unlikely was it to happen to LeBron James, given the performance he had put up in 10 postseason games prior to last night? And then secondly, do you think there's any chance whatsoever? And this is one of the reasons I was giving you such a hard time about your pessimistic prediction, perhaps, for Game 4. There's no way he doesn't come back with a vengeance and on a mission in Game 4 after the embarrassment that he suffered last night.
Well, first of all, it was shocking, obviously. And, you know, you see LeBron playing at this kind of level in this postseason, arguably his best postseason to this point. And then you see a dud like that. It's like, you know, going 100 miles an hour to slam it on the brakes. And you just can't believe what you're seeing. You know, and I had tweeted out that I couldn't remember one worse than that. And of course, you know, people are like, oh, don't you remember 2010, 2011? Don't you remember the finals against the Mavericks? Okay, fine. Yeah. They were way back when. I mean, that seems like ancient history since the last time he turned in a clunker like this.
And he's so much of a better player today. He's a way better player than he was then. And he won the MVP that year too. He's a better player now at 32. I think we've seen, which is what made last night so, you know, just unbelievable.
You know, and you may think that I'm trying to make excuses for him. I'm not. He didn't make excuses for himself. And now that I think of it, it's possible Harden had the same thing. It maybe, just maybe, these guys who we think are robotic, who are physical marvels, maybe they wake up one day, or a particular day, and they don't feel good. You know, they don't have the turbo jet. They don't have the burst that they normally do. And they try to work through it during the course of the day, and they try to work through it in, you know, whatever practice leading up to the game. And then when it comes time to hit the gas and to do what you are so accustomed to doing, you can't quite do it. I mean, it's possible that's what happened in the case of Harden. It's possible that's what happened in the case of the King. Doesn't mean that he's gas for the season and that he doesn't have any more energy. No, I'm not saying it. I'm just saying that there's a possibility that he woke up that day and didn't have the energy that he normally does, because the rest of us humans do. We go through those days where it doesn't work for us, and then the next day you wake up and you feel great.
and because here's the reason I'm speculating on that. Mm-hmm. I didn't see anything that the Celtics did differently against him than they had done at any other game that I can remember. Certainly not the first two games in Boston Garden this playoff. You know, it wasn't anything dramatic. They weren't, you know, double and triple teaming him. They weren't jumping him at the timeline when he came over the line. They weren't hacking him like crazy. You know, this wasn't any sort of dirty tricks defense. They played him straight up a lot. Crowder had him a lot. I mean, it didn't look to me like, and he said, no, he didn't see anything that they were doing differently. So that's the reason I just wonder if it was one of those days where LeBron just didn't have his energy.
Yeah, it's clear, and I want to go to the question that was asked by our mutual friend Kenny Rhoda, who now for the second
time
in the
road, man,
has drawn the scorn of one of his interview subjects through again. And I say this not because he's a colleague and a friend, and same with you, but because it's right. He did not ask anything wrong of Dwayne Casey when he asked about the Cavs' domination of the Raptors. And he did not ask anything wrong of LeBron James here, but he took the brunt end of LeBron's wrath, if you will, here.
For you, you said, you know, it was just your game. Couldn't get into a rhythm tonight. Is that what it was based on their defense or just not feeling it or what?
Legitimate question, because LeBron had said multiple times prior to that, I just didn't have it tonight. I didn't have it. And so Kenny, responsibly as a reporter, follows up with, what exactly does doesn't have it mean? Did they defend you in a different way that made you not have it? Was it just you didn't have a rhythm? Can you give us a little more on what it means to not have it? And, of course, the response was?
No, I was just pretty poor. I mean, what do you want me to say?
Yeah.
Seemed like you only answered. You only ask questions when we lose. It's a weird thing with you, Kenny. I always come around when we lose, I swear. Yeah, okay.
He's off mic. He's off mic there, Dennis, but I think I hear Kenny in the background saying, I'm here all the time. And
no, they're
I
having
think he
fun,
is.
Bob.
Yeah.
Bob, they're having fun. That is funny. I was laughing. No, they go way back. You ask Kenny Rhoda, he'll tell you. When I heard that, I was laughing. There's nothing wrong with that. No, LeBron and Kenny go way back. He was having fun with Kenny there.
It didn't sound fun from LeBron's standpoint.
No,
it was salty,
fine.
And it sounded
no.
like, you know what? Why? What more do you want me to say? Especially after the long pause. You know this part.
No, I was just pretty poor. I mean,
and the pause.
What do you want me to say?
Then what do you want me to say? And then the more pause. It sounded like LeBron was really ticked that he had to continue to say, look, I played bad, okay? And what more do you want me to say other than I didn't have it? I played bad. I'm not denying that they don't go way back, obviously, because Kenny's been covering there in Cleveland for many, many years, and now from Canton. But he didn't sound like he was joking. And when Kenny, when Kenny off mic in the background there said, I'm here all the time, it didn't sound like he was joking either.
No, it's good, Bob. Believe me, it's all good. Here's the thing I learned about the King, all right? If he doesn't like you or respect you, he is not going to use your first name. You can take that to the bank. When he doesn't like you or doesn't respect you, he will not use your first name. Just by using the name Kenny, that to me, listen, he was...
Well,
I think
what he did like him and respect him, but in that moment in time, D-Man, he disrespected him. And he did so on the national stage. It's all over national media about how testy and salty LeBron was with a reporter who asked a very legitimate question here. I thought it was very disrespectful. And you know, if Kenny is his friend or they know each other to the point where just in interviews he knows his first name, I'd be a little, next time I see him, I'd be saying, hey, why did you do that to me? You know what I asked was a legitimate question.
Yeah, well, you and I are disagreeing there. Because, hey, listen, I don't want to say that Kenny is LeBron's friend or LeBron is Kenny's friend. No, we're not friends in this business. You're not friends with the media. But they get along is what I'm saying in a professional player relationship. I would stake whatever reputation I have on the fact that LeBron was not grinding. He wasn't furious. If he was really upset about it, he would have gone on some sort of tirade and he would have walked off right there and, you know, and yelled and screamed or something. No, I think he was actually,
he didn't say with a smile. He didn't say with a smirk. You know, and if it's a guy he really does respect, why didn't he just say, you know what, I wish I could put it into words, Kenny. I don't know how to describe it, but I just didn't feel it tonight. That's all he, well, you know. But he didn't do that. He disrespected him and said, why do you only ask questions when we lose? Seems like you only come around here when we lose. That was a disrespectful comment, I think. And I think it shows a little bit of wear and tear on the fact that LeBron just had such a bad game and felt really, really rightfully crappy about it.
No, I'm not buying it. The other thing is he didn't laugh because I think LeBron was very cognizant about not wanting to convey any joviality. He didn't want to, you know, make it sound like anything in the postgame presser was funny because he didn't want to project like this was just some goofy loss. You know, he wanted everybody to know.
He succeeded because it didn't sound funny or jovial. It sounded like he was really ticked off, which I think he really was. Now, let me ask you about J.R. Smith this morning. You heard J.R.'s comments, I'm assuming?
Yeah.
J.R. Smith, of all people, now, who, and I mentioned this earlier on, he kind of owes his deal to LeBron. I mean, you know, when the Cavs were trying to decide and there was that protracted negotiation about how much JR was worth and whether the Cavaliers wanted to take on the long-term commitment for a guy who in bursts is tremendous but is also a little bit flaky. And it was LeBron, by all accounts, and you can verify that, Dennis, who pretty much told the Cavaliers, pay this man. Same with Tristan Thompson. Pay this man. We need this guy. And JR Smith was asked about LeBron's performance last night. And J.R., of all people, had some advice for King James.
People like him, you got to play confident the whole night and play aggressive. I mean, it's the conference finals. It's not enough for him. For what he does, what he brings, it's not enough. He knows that. We know that. And just expecting him to be better on game four.
Play confident. Play more aggressive. We need more than that. He knows that. We need more than that from him in game number four. A little surprised at JR's commentary and advice there about to LeBron about how to be confident and aggressive?
No, nothing that comes out of JR Smith's mouth surprises me. Listen, if this were any other guy, the King would probably pull him aside and scold him. But it's JR, and LeBron gets along very well with JR. If this were any team, any other team, I would say this is a potential crisis. But the Cavaliers, they perform better when they are, you know, not dysfunctional in that way, but when they have guys, you know, nipping at each other, when they have anxiety or angst, they seem to perform better than when everybody's comfortable, everybody's singing each other's praises, and it's all lovey-dovey. So this kind of stuff is fine. LeBron's not going to be yelling at Smith. He's not going to pout in game four because his teammate called him out. And by the way, if I'm the king and I am, you know, a little upset with JR, I'm like, JR, how about, even though you made the three, granted, to tie the game there at the end, how about you don't fall for the Brad Stevens banana in the tailpipe pick play and stick with Bradley, and we'll be going to overtime. You know, how about that?
The Axel Foley reference. I love that. The Axel Foley reference, and we're going to wrap it up on that one, D-Man. Always a pleasure to blast off with
you, brother. Just getting warmed up, my friend.
I know, but I'm out of time. We got trouble in Detroit, my friend, I got to deal with now. Thanks for talking to us from Cleveland. We'll talk again soon. Thank you, Dennis. Dennis Maniloff joining us on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Justin Rogers of the Detroit News. Why did the Dirty D, talking about the Detroit Lions, do Calvin Johnson so wrong at the end? At least that's Calvin's version of it. Justin Rogers joins us next right here on the Ticket.
Once again, it's the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Rolling onward, 4:39 now. We got 21 more minutes technically of outstanding awesome left for you. We'll turn it over to Mike Miller for Drive Time coming your way at 5 right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. I want to go north of the state line now, go up to the D, talk a little bit about the Detroit Lions. Not any current Lions, however, it is, of course, former Lion Megatron Calvin Johnson who's in the news these days, kind of complaining a little bit about the way things ended when he parted ways with the Ford family and the Detroit Lions. On the way out the door, the team had the temerity to ask him for $320,000 back from his signing bonus, 10% of the amount that he signed for, which was $3.2 million. That didn't sit well with him. And for more on the story and some reaction to it, Justin Rogers, who covers the Lions for the Detroit News, joining us now on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket here in Toledo. Hey, Justin, how are you?
Hey, Bob, I'm hanging in there.
Good to talk to you. I appreciate it. Is this kind of a downtime for you now? Or I guess you got OTAs that are going to be going on too, but is that period of time after the draft and before, you know, the start of training camp? I mean, is this kind of your lower, you know, time as far as requirements during the year?
It's a little bit slower right now. It really dies down completely mid-June after minicamp up through training camp. That's the true NFL offseason there for that about 5 or 6 week stretch. There's still stuff going on between the draft, rookies checking in, OTAs, as you mentioned, then minicamp to kind of keep me going, keep the wheels churning here through the next month or so. But you know, then that real vacation kicks in.
So you don't have a lack of things to write about, because that's the reason I was asking. Is this Calvin story, of course, is kind of making the rounds not only through Detroit but nationally because of the presence of Calvin Johnson while he was in the league. So let's talk a little bit about this. Calvin essentially has said that he feels like it was kind of a rough parting of ways. It felt a little bit disrespected perhaps by the organization, and also didn't like the fact that he had to give 10% of that signing bonus back. Can you give us some of the backdrop here? What's Calvin talking about?
Yeah, you know, and who knows how much the Lions asked for initially. The 10% was the final agreed upon amount between the two parties. And so what happens here is in a case of a retirement or, retirement, I guess, is the best example, a team has the right to ask back for the prorated portion of the signing bonus. So if a player signed for 5 years, played three, and then decided to retire, a team could ask back two-fifths of the remaining 2 years of that contract signing bonus. In Calvin's case, it was two-fifths of what he had remaining left on his contract. And it's really up to the team. And if you look at kind of historically where that's happened, generally teams will ask back for that money when the circumstances are trying, you know, maybe in a Chris Borland case where he just up and quit after 1 year on a rookie deal after the team, you know, invested in his development and he knew it was unusual for him to retire that early. Or when a player kind of, I guess, screws a team in terms of like a Barry Sanders or a Ricky Williams, a guy retiring essentially on the eve of training camp or on the cusp of training camp where a team doesn't have an opportunity to really replace those players. Then you see more of like that retaliatory recouping of the benefits. In Calvin's case, it's a little bit more unusual. When a player's spent time with an organization, when he's contributed through his entire career, has been a high character guy, has given, you know, everything on the field, it's pretty unlikely, pretty unusual for an organization to try to recoup any of that. You saw it recently with Dallas, with Tony Romo, Marshawn Lynch in Seattle, New England with Jared Mayo. It's just more unusual. So, you know, it kind of starts with the Lions, you know, not, I guess, showing the same level of class or dignity maybe as some of the other top-tier organizations around the NFL. And, you know, to an extent, Calvin's at fault here. Not for retiring early because, you know, whatever, you know, the circumstances go there, but, to take offense to it, to hold the grudge over a course of a year and to talk about it when asked about it. It's not a great look on a guy that did make a pretty good salary while he was here with the Lions.
So Justin, we're talking to Justin Rogers, who covers the Lions for the Detroit News. This is all about money. This is just all about this demand for repayment of a prorated portion of the signing bonus. And as you say, they agreed upon 10% at the end of the day. Is that the only reason for the ill feelings? Is that what Johnson meant? And I'll quote from your own article, as you quoted from the Free Press, I just didn't feel like I was treated the way I should have been treated on the way out. That's all. I mean, it's all good. I'm not tripping. I just don't feel any kind of way. Just, hey, that's what they did. It is what it is. So is he talking anything more about, you know, I don't know, honors, or did anybody not say the right things about him when he said he was retiring as the great player that he was, or is it just all about money?
No, I can't say it's just about money. There could be other underlying factors that we don't know yet and may never know. In terms of honoring him, you know, this, you know, that's not Calvin. Calvin didn't ever seek out the spotlight in that way. The part of the reason he didn't hint at his retirement earlier, even though it was said that he was considering it from the start of last season, was because he didn't want that unnecessary attention to be around his retirement, but around the season as a whole. He declined to have a press conference at the end of the season, which is, you know, a fairly unusual move for a guy of his stature, but just wasn't something that interested him. He didn't want to give anything beyond just the statement of his release. And, you know, some have speculated that, you know, maybe he wanted the Lions to give him an opportunity to play elsewhere. I'd never sensed that at any point, including very late in that last season, before the retirement talk became clear. You know, I was in a interview with a small group of reporters with him, and that question was raised, you know, would you want to play elsewhere when you're, you know, to have an opportunity to win that Super Bowl ring? I don't remember the player in context we were using it with, but so many have gone and chased championship rings in different organizations, different sports. And he said, I just don't have any interest in that. He goes, I've invested all my time and energy here. The most meaningful thing I could ever do is win here, and winning elsewhere would feel cheap. So, you know, I to say he didn't change his mind late in his career or in those last few months, I mean, it could have happened, but, you know, he was pretty consistent in that message over the last few years of his career.
So, Justin, how do you think the fans feel about this? You know, I mean, obviously you've kind of, well, you've been very fair, I think. In reading your article, you know, in its headline, is Calvin deserve better from the Lions? It sounds like it's more on the team for asking for what amounted to, as you point out 0.2% of cap space. So it's kind of petty on their part. But in talking to me, you said Calvin really didn't exactly handle it the best of ways either. So how do you think the fans feel about that? Do they kind of feel like the team did Calvin a little wrong, or are they kind of like, hey, you know what, this is equal, and you know, they part and go their separate ways and we move on?
Well, first, I don't write headlines, but it's, you
know,
sometimes,
I know, accurately capture your article?
Yeah, it was okay. You know, I always think it could be better, but, you know, it's always – there's an onus on me where I could suggest headlines and I don't do the best job at doing that. So
I got you.
I guess I'm also partially to blame here, but,
No, but if I may, Justin, I'm sorry to interrupt. But just looking at your summary paragraph at the very end, seeking repayment wasn't the move of a first-class organization. So perhaps that's what your headline runner was deciding here. You know what? Calvin deserved better from the Lions. They could have been more classy. They could have handled this differently. And I think that's a fair summary of your article, in my opinion, but I didn't write it. I only read it.
Yeah, so I don't get a ton of email feedback. It's just that avenue of feedback has kind of gone the way of the dinosaur, as so many others have in the recent years. But today I've been fairly overwhelmed by email from the moment this one posted. Within 10 minutes, I probably had 5, and overall had 10 to 15 emails since it's posted this afternoon or late this morning. And almost all of them have been against Calvin. And I think that's just the nature of fans in general. As one Twitter user kind of pointed out to me, fans root for jerseys, not for players.
Right.
And I think that's a very true statement. It doesn't matter how much you give an organization. Once you're gone, fans don't care about you anymore. That's true in college. That's true in the professional ranks. And so, you know, it's always interesting to me that fans are quick to side with the billionaires versus the millionaires and the argument. But, you know, that's where it's gone for at least the vocal portion of the audience. My guess is there's probably a lot of apathy to the story. You know, you're talking about a very large amount of money to most of us, a very small amount of money to the Ford family and to Calvin Johnson. So I think a lot of people are having a hard time relating to it. And, you know, had it not been May, had it not been a slower time of year for the news cycle of the NFL, it probably wouldn't be getting as much play as it is. It's just the nature of the time of year that there's a little bit more attention on this one, and I think most fans would prefer that just dies quickly.
I don't know where you were in your career back when Barry left, but when Barry left, that was, what, 99, correct?
I was graduating high school, first year of college.
So you were a fan.
That's where
then.
I was.
So you maybe were in a better position to answer this question now from a fan standpoint, because I think you're right. Once you leave, the fans forget about you. Essentially, you know, almost all of the time, fans root for, another way to say it is, the name on the front of the jersey, not the name on the back. And once you're gone, they're still going to be with the front. And that's certainly the case here with Calvin. But do you recall how they were with Barry because he was so different, because he was the best at what he did, because he was a first ballot Hall of Famer, and the fact that he was so young and that he left after 2 years, as you point out in your piece, of a 6-year contract.
Yeah, I barely remember my own reaction. The funny thing is I remember my college roommate's reaction more than my own, because he was a season ticket holder. He was a super fan, and he just was in disbelief. I remember we were both sitting there watching SportsCenter or whatever, and it came across the ticker, and he just couldn't speak for hours. Like, he just was so depressed by the whole thing. I think that
was
one where
I was too, and I'm not a Detroiter. I'm a native Clevelander, but Barry Sanders was my favorite player, and I rooted for him. And when he left, I was furious, because I thought if anybody could break the all-time record, it's going to be this guy. And it should be this guy instead of Emmitt Smith, because I always felt like Barry Sanders was so much better than Emmitt Smith. Emmitt Smith was just in a better situation. I was livid when he left. I can only imagine how your friend, the superfan, and other people like that felt.
I feel like that situation's changed as more information's come along. Like back then, I think more blame went toward the Lions initially from fans, because Barry was such an upstanding guy. He was still in the prime of his career, and many people felt that the Lions losing ran him off, which is funny because that was kind of where the Lions had peaked in terms of success during the 90s, at least, since their championship days back in the 50s. And they felt like they didn't give Barry enough support, and that's what drove him away. And it's probably true. Probably why he did leave, a little bit different than Johnson. But, Barry ultimately deserved some blame in that situation because of the timing of the way he walked away. It was a big screw you to the organization. He made up his mind at the wrong time. And I know you got to do what's best for you, but when you're going out on that note, it just really sours the ending of your story. At least with Calvin, he left, he gave the organization a heads up that he was considering it, that he was contemplating it, that it was realistic from January. So they could focus their scouting efforts, their financial, understanding of how to approach free agency, in a plan A and a plan B manner. And then once he did decide, he gave them that notice before free agency started, so they could immediately go out and address the need, whether it was free agency or the draft. Mm-hmm. When Barry did it, it's like, oh, training camp's tomorrow, so I guess you're going to have to roll with what you got. And, it really set the organization back there for a while. So, like I said, hindsight, I blame Barry more, but I understand, or as I remember it, fans were more angry at the Lions at the time.
And you know what? I completely understand all of that. You're right, and I think today the feeling should be, you know what, Barry, that was bad. That was a screw you to the organization. You put him in a bad spot right before training camp. But even today, even after, what's that been, 18 years now, I still can understand if he felt like, you know what, I'm just sick and tired of losing. I'm going to come out here. I'm going to set records. I'm going to put my heart on the line. I'm going to put it all on the line, and I might run for another 2,000 yards or something. But you know what? At the end of the day, I'm really tired of 8-8, 9-7, 10-6, maybe a first-round playoff ouster, but maybe 6-10 as far as we know. And you always just feel like the great players deserve better when they're stuck in a situation like that.
And I guess the situation you can look at now is, I don't remember exactly how long it was awkward, but it was awkward between the Lions and Sanders for a while. They pursued the signing bonus money with him, and it was more of a contentious case. He wanted to be traded and released, and they were content to leave him sitting in retirement and paying for his sins, I guess. But that relationship is mended now. I think Barry has a very good relationship with the Lions, vice versa. So, I think the wound with Calvin Johnson is much shallower than what it was when Barry Sanders left between the two sides. So I would fully expect that this will be mended in short order. Maybe it's not tomorrow, but this isn't something that's going to drag out years. I can't imagine it over
right. What,
like I said, is such a small amount of money, relatively speaking.
Hey, Justin, we've got about 1 minute left. The music's about to start playing, so let me just ask you this on the way out the door. Overall grade that you would give the Lions thus far in their offseason? That's free agency, draft, player personnel, et cetera. How do you grade them?
Oh, in terms of just filling needs, yeah, I would say it's a solid B. I think they could have done more with the defensive line, but they filled a lot of holes elsewhere. I love what they did offensive line. I love the linebacker dish in the draft. It looks good on paper. Now it's got to show up on the field.
Well said. Good stuff, as always, by Justin Rogers. Justin, keep up the great work. We appreciate it. We'll keep reading you down here in Toledo and grabbing you on the radio whenever you whenever you've got the availability. We appreciate it always.
Look forward to it, Bob.
Thanks so much, Justin. Justin Rogers joining us right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, and that wraps it up. Stay where you are, though, because just because we're done doesn't mean that you're done. Mike Miller and Drive Time coming your way next right here on The Ticket. We'll see you tomorrow.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.